Mr. Higton, Reel 7. Had there been any special preparations for your embarkation on Christmas morning that you remember?
No.
Did you get leave or anything?
We was kept quiet because the troop movements were tend to be kept on the quiet side. We knew, mind being at Aldershot, we knew very well that that was a place that we would move from. And we moved to Liverpool the day before and we moved on to the ship.
Do you remember the name?
Yes, it was in Derbyshire. I moved on the night before. And the only time I've been seasick was that night. The boat was in Arm and we were going up and down with the choppy tide. And the wind was terrible. But I was alright next morning by the time we sailed. And we sailed. And my most abiding memory is the due west into the Atlantic, and then turned south. And it was a brilliant night, the stars were shining, and this Sergeant Dalby I've been telling you about, he sat or stood on the deck with his back to the rails and his saying, "Moonlight becomes you." Didn't become on myself. Yeah. And I enjoyed that trip.
What were your conditions like? I mean, for the men and then for you as a sergeant?
As a sergeant, we got Sergeant Caddy, he's a Nottingham man, and we two had a cabin. The men were bunked down, and most of them were in the hammocks. Those that weren't in hammocks within the three tier beds.
What was conditions like for the men on the mess deck?
Not too bad.
Not too overcrowded?
Not too overcrowded, but not too bad.
What about the food?
The food was very good, and the most enjoyable thing we never had for a long while, remembering the rest of it, was ship's bread. Beautiful white spongy bread, baked on the ship. The lads couldn't believe it. Yes. And the first part of the trip, uneventful. Beautiful. The second part, after the passage of water, going up the bed, I think the boat stood upon its end. You could see the gimbals, the light gimbals moving around as the
rough weather.
Rough weather. Ooh, terrible. Yes. We pulled into Halsey's Harbour on January the 2nd. And there was the Ramillies. There's four or five big battleships in there, and I've never seen one close before, close to. And they stood there, and what mighty things they were. And we sat in the harbour, and looked in Calvier's, I think it was like a picture poster, and all the palm trees, and it was fantastic. And so they said, yes, wait till you get to shore. Anyway, we went to shore.
And what were your first impressions then of when you got ashore?
Ooh, it stunk. That's the only way you can say it stunk. And I was on the closing party. I stayed there. The lads came up and they was up in the buses and away they went. And I stayed there that day, all night, and the next day with the kit and kit bags and all the rest of it. And I had two ladders with me. And the first thing they did was disappear, and then they find the grapple. And they were back again, sozzled, but they were all right. Had a couple of hours sleep and they were all right. I didn't report it, but well, the first time they'd had a bit of their own, and first time they'd had a chance. And we went, the next day, we loaded the kit bags on a three-tonner, and we went to a place called Mason Killeen, which is 2 miles from Algiers.
It's a sort of transit camp training area, isn't it?
That's right, yes. And I was fascinated by the orange groves. and the tangerines, and we was warned, and we had a tub there with the Thomas Flores in. If you have any tangerines, drop them in before you peel them in, just to make sure that there's no infection. And we was in an old school building there, Mason 3. And from there...
You doing anything there?
No one is watching kit, just we had radios, we had the old, not the old 18, we had the new 38, which was a smaller one, and we were taught how to use those, and how to carry the batteries, how to change the batteries, how to use a mine. And chiefly it was...
Was everyone taught or just the NCOs?
Just the NCOs. And, chiefly it was making sure you got all your kit all in good order and made sure your socks were okay and all that stuff. But from there you can see the Atlas Mountains, over miles away. And I said to Gordon Barker, I won't mind a walk on there, Gordon. He said, you'll probably be there sooner than you want, my lad. And he was right, it was only a couple of days. And we, again, I went with the beer party. And we had a 1500 weight truck with a gear on the back and a 2-pounder tagged on behind us. And we set off what I thought was a nice jaunt to the Atlas Mountain. And it took us 2 days and 2 nights to get there, not far enough. But the air was so clear that it looked like it was in the underground there. But some of those hills we went through were so steep that as a summit, now it can be dark on one side and light on the other, you know, the razor. But again, at night time, you couldn't leave your van, your truck.
Why not?
The Arabs were there all the way around, and you'd look in the back of the truck, and if you went to the back, you'd look in the front of the truck. So it was actually one out of each truck had to be patrolling all night long.
What did you think of the Arabs then?
Not much then, you know, because we only met, but afterwards I met quite a few, because they were French speaking, and I got on quite well.
But initially you didn't like them?
Initially, no, because it was this fear of, you know, the thieving all the way. I suppose there was a time after that, but we didn't finish this one to start, but afterwards I didn't meet one of them. They were quiet, and it was just their method of living. One chap used to come and meet us, even when we got flint trenches on, said, you know, he'd come and meet us and bring us some eggs. And one day he brought his little daughter with him, and the thing they wanted was soap. Because you look at the little girl, and although she was dusky coloured, you could tell it was a layer of muck on top of it. But they'd do anything for a bar of soap. And we got them quite well.
So, how long were you at Maison Carré?
I was only there a day or two. It was just a matter of getting all the gear together and getting everything together and then away.
So then you had this 600 odd mile journey.
Up into the mountains, yes.
And what was the situation when you got up there?
The first night we got there, we stayed. We said, you know, a couple of miles out, we stayed in a wood, and we had a bath. But the bath was a hole dug in the ground and a couple of ground seeds put in it and water poured in. And that was a bath. And then we stayed a couple of days there.
That's behind the front line area.
Behind the front line, yeah. And then we marched up to the position. We were told to lay one of the books of the Kevin and all, we put our little groups on it. And we was on, the first time we were there, we was on the reverse slope away from the air station area. We was on the reverse slope.
It's in the Green Hill area, is it?
Green Hill, I think, yes.
And whereabouts were you in relation to the road and the hills?
We would be a mile off the road, because then we had a couple of mills for bringing the cooking. We used a can full of sand with petrol poured in, so there was no smoke.
So what were your positions like? You're on the reverse slope at first.
We were on the reverse slope, slip trenching, and whatever one we could find, put on the top, and then go with the soil, hoping that the lads call it a burst, of course. They said if you put stones on the top, if anything hits it, you'll explode before it comes in the trench. But they didn't say that you'd get the draft of the trench, was the same. My Corporal Cumberland from Nottingham, he'd been on this course, field training course, where they taught him this, how to dig slip trenches and how to make yourself secure. And Cumberland, I called him myself, who had one slip trench between us, and then covered in.
Now, were they already dug for you, or did you have to dig them? And who laid them out? Cumberland and you, or would your officer?
The officer would give us an area, say, I want your section, that is your area. And then it was left to us to pick the most suitable spot.
What were you looking for?
We were looking for anything which was a natural defence, because we knew which way the shells were coming. And after that, somewhere we could dig in quickly and get down to. There's rocks now, and it was not over. If you could find fissures between the rocks, you can get down quickly.
What about fields of fire?
We only had the back. I say we were facing backwards, so it was only a matter of one section covering it at night. Which is a later story, but that's where it slipped up. I will tell you one funny story. We got there just as the rainy season was on its way, and I had a lance corporal granddaughter named Jackson, came from Manchester, he was a solicitor, and he was part of the character, his own quiet way was Jackson, and he had a slip trench facing the rear, and that night he was his turn on guard. And it poured the rain. Now, imagine it, we're on the reverse slope. And they've got this slip trench. The back is higher than the front. The front slope is the other side. And the heavens opened, and it poured. And Jackson sat there in the trench, and it filled up. And he sat there with his tin hat and his down sheet on, facing the front, and he was singing, "Onward, Christian soldiers." And the shells came over, and they shouted, "Sergeant," I said, "what's the matter?" He said, "tell them to stop." He said, "somebody's going to get there before long. Onward, Christian." And he was quite a character, although he was, you know, he was on top of the job, but he was his way of making himself unafraid.
So it was raining hard, you were in these. Did you share the sled? So there'd be two of you in each one?
Two of us in each one, yeah. Two of us in each one. Yeah.
And did the officer come round to inspect where you'd put your slip trenches?
No, he didn't give you a shot. He was all in himself for this. He'd been building them. Batman had built him a nice little small slip trench. And we'd been building them. I'd say Captain Taylor was our company commander, and he was the first casualty. He'd only been there a couple of days, and Jerry was shelling and mortaring, and one dropped, and poor old Captain Kelly. It was a little trench, and that was the end of Captain Kelly. And he was a very quiet gentleman. He was the first casualty.
What was it like being under that sort of shell fire?
Not very pleasant. Not very pleasant.
Was it shells or was it mortars?
See, being mortars, you could hear it. You could hear a thump at the other end as the mortar started off, and then you and down it would crash. Yeah. Yeah. Now the long tongs, the German big guns, you could hear those going over because they were after the headquarters down the wire. And you could hear those shells whistle across the top, because we knew we were safe. It was on the other slope. But they made the most. You could hear them run across. We got to ignore it, isn't it?
Now, what was your daily routine like in these slit trenches then? So what time, what, how would it, how would a typical day run on for you?
Typical day, there was no rebelling. Mostly, you get in right early morning and we'd be up and about.
Would you have a stand to, or would that sort of thing all gone?
No, that had gone. We didn't have a stand to. We had the platoon sergeant to pop down and set everything in order. Yeah, and he'd check, make sure your gun was okay, position okay. And then he'd go to the next section, and the next section, three sections of the platoon. When he was satisfied, then he would report to the company officer. But there was no, as you say, there was no stand to it, as a stand to.
So let's check it. And then what about breakfast? Would that happen, or would there be any duty to it? Or food, it might, you know.
Food, I say, it did come up and it could be come round to it. And the headquarters staff would do what we put on the old petrol fires. But chiefly, it was biscuits and bully beef and a tin of fruit. What we didn't get there, and you'd get one a week, was a bottle of gin. And
between how many?
We'd get one between four, and it was 4 and 6 pence a bottle. Because we didn't pay for it, because we didn't have any money. And so we'll book it down to you. But that whiskey was 6 and 6, wouldn't the favourite would around with gin.
And that came up in the front line?
That came up in the front line, it came up with the rations.
Didn't that lead to some drunkenness?
No, because you never know, once you've been gone, you've been gone. You never knew when the next one was coming. No, I never saw any drunkenness at all.
So, you mainly bully beef. Would you get any hot meals or from the cooks at the headquarters, or were they just trying to get tea out?
We didn't get any hot meals as such, but after a fortnight, second at the time, we'd gone to the woods, and then you'd get hot meal and a bath and whatnot. But chiefly, it was cold stew. McCormick is cold stew.
Do you get sick of it?
Not really.
So you might have something for breakfast. What would you do in the day then? It's a long day ahead of you in the slit trench.
There was no sort of set meal times. You was on your own. They'd give you food, and we had these 48-hour pipes. Cardboard pack. Some of them for two, some of them for four.
This is what they call compo?
Compo, yeah. And you get one of those and they give you one of those. And you make it last the afternoon one. But with no fires except the petrol can. Yes.
Now these petrol cans, they were the mixture of petrol and sand. Did they work?
Yes, they did. Yeah. Be careful how you start and go off. But once you got going, you got a nice flame. Without smoke. Yes.
What would you use that for?
We use that for drinking the tea, chiefly. Gunfire. Yeah.
Tea was important then?
Tea was mostly important, yes. Tea was mostly important. And it was dried milk. But once you got used to that, you're alright, no problem.
Yeah. So, what would you be doing during the day?
I'd be checking the brain was checking the lab ammunition.
So just like the platoon sergeant to check, you'd check as well?
My section. My section would be checked and made sure they got enough ammunition. They'd have 50 rounds a man in bandoliers and the brain gunner would have a couple of magazines, one arm on one side of him, and then number two would have two more. And then all the men would send for a pill magazine. They only want to do that.
Now, that doesn't sound like it would take very long. What did you do with the rest of the day?
It was boring. In fact, I'm sorry I let them go, but I got permission from Gordon Martin to go up to the top of the hill, carefully know where, and make pencil drawings of what I could see of the German fronts and whatnot. And I did a lot of these. I passed them back to him. What he did with them, I don't know. I did keep some of them. Each time I went to, I'd give him a couple of the Thames roll.
What could you see from up there?
I could see where I'd been told the Germans were.
You were they were on Green Hill, weren't they? And you were facing. What was your hill called?
We had Baldy and... there was three we used. Baldy was one of the others. And Green Hill was the one we was on.
You were on Green Hill?
Yeah, but we was on the reverse slope. The Germans was on the other side. We went to Baldy. And we stayed there. Well, that was more of a sheer cliff phase. But there's some climbing. And then we moved back.
Hang on. So, when you went forward, could you actually see the German lines?
We could see where we told you was and where our artillery was pasting. We couldn't see the individual Germans or know they were there. I did get news from the Arabs as to where they were, because they were moving freely across no man's land. As I said before, when the shellfire started, they'd sit underneath the donkeys. They'd be riding the donkeys till the fire started, and then they'd get up and sit underneath. And they did give a little bit of information. Whether they did the same thing for the Jerry or not, I don't know.
Did you give them anything for information?
I would give them a couple of flags or... we moved out to
hang on. And so, what else would you do during the day?
Write letters, write cards. In fact, I've got one card somewhere, field card, which we ought to get back again. But chiefly, it was making sure everything was in readiness.
So you just sit in your slit trench.
You can move around during the day, as long as you got ready to take cover when the planes came over.
Did they come out aircraft? Was there much German?
Not a lot, no. There was a couple came over regular, and I mean, we realised after what had happened, and we photographed in position and what we were doing. And we once saw a Spitfire, only once, and then they disappeared. The Jerrys, they had a couple of planes that came over pretty regularly, a couple of times a day when they were over.
Now, what about during the night? What sort of activities would you have during the night? Was there much patrolling or
patrolling, or
standing patrols on the far slope?
Yeah, standing patrols just over the ground.
Did you ever do that?
I did the field patrols where we went out.
Let's do the standing first. What would you do on a standing patrol then?
You keep in touch. You'd be observing more than anything.
Would you be in slit trenches? Or just...
No.
How far over the brow of the hill would you go?
Only 100 yards or so, just so you've got a good feel of view.
And how far forward in front of you would the Germans be?
They would across the valley.
I thought there was a valley, yeah. So they would be sort of in the same positions opposite?
Opposite, yeah.
You wouldn't go into the valley, though?
No, the only time I went in the valley after I'd been captured.
Okay. Yeah. So you were... And what would the standing... You're on a standing floor, you just go out.
Observe.
How many of you?
There'd be two of us, and then you'd want to... Not to observe, but if you want any news to go back, one of you would have to go back with it. Yeah.
And you'd lie out all night?
Yeah. Till just hold on. Move back one
Did
night.
You ever see anything on standing patrol?
Yeah.
And then, what about... you mentioned the other patrols.
Yeah, we went out on... On a recce.
Now, how did you organise a reconnaissance patrol?
That was organised at battalion level, and although there was one platoon of us, 30 of us went. It was all laid on. We knew which part of the line to go through, and we travelled at night. Travelled all night.
So the whole of your platoon went out.
Yeah.
So it's a fighting patrol.
Fighting patrol.
And your officer as well, then.
The officer, he led. Yes, he led. And, we had extra Bren guns. Instead of the three, we had the six Bren guns. We travelled all night, and then lined up during the day. We took a second night, and we finished overlooking Lake Constantine.
So that's not across the valley, then?
we went across the line and right through. And the thing we had to watch.
How did you get through the German lines?
We went round them. We didn't go through them. We went round them. Went round the German lines, and the only thing which would give us away, and we were very careful, was the Arab dogs, because as soon as they smelled them, they yapped into them. So we went round the German lines, and we finished up overlooking Lake Constantine. We're in German way, and we saw their seaplane landing on the Lake Constantine. And the Italians were on the opposing hill to us, and we had the RA spotter with us too, and the radio back given the Italian positions with the artillery pacing them. And I've never seen anybody move so quickly in my life. And if it hadn't been so disastrous for the Italians, it would have been funny, because you. I don't know their uniform, the baggy trousers and baggy coats. They always stick their rations in the back. And they went up that mountain, so it was like mountain goats. Just ended up a little quick through the area there.
How far had you gone, do you reckon, to Lake Constantine?
I don't know, but it took us 2 nights. It took us 2 nights.
Of travelling in a jeep? Anything else happened while you were out?
No, we got back all right. We got back all right. And then...
And you'd gone from Green Hill?
We'd gone from Green Hill, and then we moved us to Baldy.
Now, where was Baldy? Next to it, just next to Long?
Yes, next to Long.
And that was steeper, you say?
And that was steeper.
Still in slit trenches?
No, we was in the open there, because it was rock, solid rock. But we only stayed a couple of days.
Anything happened there?
Nothing happened there, but they put us in buses, and they took us south. Is it not Matua, I think the name of the village, Matua. We got there, we had something to eat, and we got in the bus, and we went back again to Green Hill. And this time we went on the forward slope.
Now, what was the point of that, when you went to Matua? That was just...
Well, I've been reading since, and it was all kidology. They were trying to kill the Germans, but that end was sealed. They were trying to push them up, push them northward.
So you went back to...
Back to Green Hill.
Now, what were these positions you took upon the forward slope?
We had to dig them. During the night, we had to dig them. And I got my brand on the number one with me in front, and there wasn't room for me. And we couldn't get any deeper because we hit rock. So just behind them was a wall of rock. I said, well, I'll be about 10 yards behind you, this wall of rock. No good trying to get 3 hours in there. We should all get chewed up. So I sat, about 10 yards, probably 5 or 6 yards behind them, could see what we're doing, and we're in touch.
Now, it was just your section then? The whole platoon?
The whole platoon was just on the bend.
So let me get you. Hadn't been at this. You hadn't patrolled at all into the valley.
No.
Oh, right. No. And you were just digging new positions.
New positions.
And
we had the word the Germans was on the move, so we were digging positions ready.
And this was on Green Hill.
On Green Hill.
So you were just a bit ahead of where you'd been before.
That's right, yeah.